Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Media Network's Dr. Christopher Hall Show, and I'm excited to welcome to the program Dr. Christopher Hall. Dr. Hall, how are you? And we were talking about, specifically enough, the coronavirus is not, it's not gone yet, and that's something we have to really understand for sure, especially in the summer months, as you're seeing a pickup in hospitals, aren't you?
You know, you're totally right, Neil. Hello, and you're totally right. This virus actually seems to be spreading from the east, and now so we're seeing a lot more increased activity in the south. So very concerning, but very excited about our guest today.
Yeah, exactly. But thank you again for your service, especially, you know, being in the front lines for us. We need you, and everyone needs to practice social distancing. It doesn't matter what political party you are, what affiliation you are, what your race, color, creed, or ethnicity, or anything, wear a mask, bottom line. But go ahead, Dr. Hall, and introduce your guest.
Well, no problem. Well, you know, it's my pleasure to introduce an actress of film and TV. We've seen her in General Hospital, but probably know her more as Teresa that we've seen her in the soap opera Days of Our Lives. So it's my honor to welcome Ms. Jen Lilly to the show. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
Hey, Jen, it's great to have you on. And then I know at the end, we're going to talk about your latest project, which is really a charitable, great action. But you probably have other projects as well. But, you know, how are you holding up with the coronavirus? You know, we think we're getting through, you know, we're starting to open up things. But again, it's still concerning, right? Especially how many months you were in quarantine for, right?
Yeah, I mean, 2020 has definitely been a doozy of a year. I think that, you know, what I'm hoping is that while this year has been excruciatingly painful in so many ways, that I'm going to view it as growing pains. You know, I think we're going to make a lot of, we have the opportunity to make a lot of progress as a society, and I hope that we do.
Absolutely. All right, Dr. Hall, first question for Jen.
Wow, it's just, I've got actually a lot of interesting questions for Jen, but I guess just kind of starting off, Jen, can you tell us a little bit about where you're from and like maybe where you went to school and where you grew up and some of your influences as a child?
Sure, definitely. I hear, where are you from is what I want to know, because I hear an accent and I love it.
I'm from Los Angeles, California. I live in Mobile, Alabama now.
You are? Oh,
yes.
There you go. You live in, I was like, you've got a little bit of a slang. I can hear it because I am from Roanoke, Virginia, which is where I was born and raised.
Awesome.
I attended the University. Yeah, I attended the University of Virginia. I had no plans of becoming an actress, and then found acting midway through college, and really fell in love with film acting. And I started taking acting classes from a local director who had moved from LA to Charlottesville. And so I started taking acting classes at night with him, not necessarily through the university. And then I studied the business of acting because I realized very early on when I was, I'm very analytical as a person. I ended up getting a minor in environmental science just because I love science so much that I was taking so many classes. A professor came up to me and was like, what is your goal here? Why are you taking all these classes? And I was like, oh, I just love science. I love statistics. I love numbers. I think it's so fascinating. And she was like, I'm sorry, what? And I was like, yeah, taking some kind of those electives. I'm a drama student. She was like, oh my God, do you want to get a degree in this? Because you're two classes away. So she unofficially became my mentor, which is funny, but I have a very analytical mind. So I realized early on that, you know, there's a lot of amazing actors who don't work, and there's a lot of not that great actors who do work and find a lot of success. So it's a business. So I started reading business of acting books and just really studying acting from a business approach, and then I graduated early, got married, and moved to LA in 2007. Because I'm from Virginia, you know, so you get married fresh out of college, and still married to my husband. He's a good guy. I picked a good one, and that's how I got into it. And as far as inspirations when I was younger, I mean, I've always just loved, like, as far as celebrity icons go, my favorites have always been not necessarily as people. I don't know their backstories, so don't judge me on this, but Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Tony Bennett. I always loved singing, which is something I've kind of recently gotten into.
Wow. So, you know, talking about Hollywood marriages, they got a lot of people look up to you guys, right? for lasting this long, going from Virginia to Hollywood, and neither of you guys strayed and you stayed together. And that definitely should be commended for it, for sure, especially when you're seeing how long these marriages or even dating lasts in LA, right?
Yeah.
In Hollywood.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I do not envy the people in the dating pool of Los Angeles.
Most definitely. All right, Dr. Hall, next question.
Wow, very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. Well, you know, the thing about Jen is that, and I've seen, actually, you know, some of her interviews, she has a really wonderful heart. And she's got some grounding where this wonderful heart comes from. I'd like her to talk about that. Tell us a little bit about how do you live your life as a Christian? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. how has that influenced things you've done in Hollywood?
You know, I always say I view Christianity as a relationship, not as an empty religion full of rules and regulations. I think that's something that, as humans, we like law and we like rules, but that's not really how God designed Christianity. So for me, I can't divorce myself from my love for Jesus. And when you love Jesus, and you genuinely love Jesus in a relational way versus based on rules or fear, you know, it informs everything that you do. It informs my entire outlook on life. My constant prayer is, you know, break my heart for what breaks yours, God. You know, let me love the things you love and hate the things that you hate. And because of that, you know, my eyes have been open to a lot of injustices, you know, that we're seeing so much in 2020. You know, I can't turn a blind eye to foster care. To really believe in our modern day orphans. And I believe that foster care only exists in the United States because it's the church's job to care for these children. You know, we're called to care for the fatherless and to care for orphans. And so these are our modern day orphans. And I think that, you know, it's always the church's job to care for these children. And the reason foster care exists and the reason it's such a broken system is because the church drops these kids off at the government's door and the government makes a terrible parent. I mean, the government's doing the best job that they know how, but they're not parents, you know? And there's a lot of flaws in any governmental system, you know? I mean, we see that even with, like, racial tension that's going on right now, you know? There are broken systems. It doesn't mean that everybody is bad. We have amazing social workers who work at every level. We have amazing policy and legislators who work at every level, but because there's corruption, because, you know, I just really believe that, you know, unless you do Jesus, like, there's going to be corruption. And even with Jesus, like, you need to repent and ask for forgiveness. So, you know, I mean, humans are flawed. And so I just try to keep focus on the Lord and that informs all of my decisions. And I'm here to spread love and, you know, to be the hands and feet of Jesus, as what the Bible says, you know, just to really, he's not here anymore. He's up in heaven. So it's my job as a Christian to basically love people as if it was him loving them. And so that's why I care for so many issues that I care about.
And see, that's very interesting because you have a mission for your whole platform, your brand, not just acting, but how you interact in the community with that acting and that mission. Just from the beginning, how you treat other people and on an audition, how you deal with other people when you are involved actively in part of the cast, all those things are very important if you can live for others and not yourself. And that's what that seems like you've kind of really made a huge part of your life.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I try to look at everything from a lens of love. That was something I was actually thinking about yesterday because, you know, I don't align myself with any political party because I'm a Christian. I just feel like it's issue by issue for me. But I have a lot of opinions, you know, on what's going on right now. And I was literally saying yesterday, like, do I speak out about this or do I speak out about this? Like, how do I use my platform? And I started thinking about it. And I was like, Jesus never put down Caesar, you know, and Caesar was seriously corrupt. You know, there was so much corruption going on when Jesus was alive. And yet, like, what did he do? He focused on loving people. And so I just was even yesterday thinking, like, how do I help all of the pain that we're experiencing in 2020? And I really think it's just keep loving people with a gentle heart and a gentle spirit. And I think that a gentle word can put out, you know, fiery anger. And if it doesn't, then, like, it's not my fault necessarily how someone responds to my kindness, but my job is to be kind and spread love. So it definitely informs everything that I do.
That's important. And so, and that's where this is very interesting. A certain situation occurred with some of my friends on Facebook that are in different groups from my career. And when I was in professional wrestling and there was an issue, I look at it like this, you know, speaking out against the atrocity is fine, but not speaking out against the person. Because you don't want to give that person any of the power, whoever has done that. You want to be like saying, okay, I don't agree with this. That's it. End it. And you don't even have to make that public opinion if you show that you're not going to get involved in this whole thing. Because the more we don't get along, the worse our world's going to become. We have to unite in the most timely manner, Dr. Hall. We have to unite. As I talked about with just masks, I said, please wear a mask. And I'm not stating it as any political party. I'm stating, please, let's keep people healthy, because I'm very scared. I mean, if you see if you didn't hear this, and 14 Texas college football players tested positive for coronavirus. Now you're telling me, so they're getting back to in the college community, and 14 of them test positive. You know, these are athletes that are in great shape, that are young, and they're getting this virus. So it's. I sure as heck don't want to be, you know, coughing and end up hospitalized. So I'm going to wear a mask and I'm going to social distance, and I'm not going to go back to the normal life till there's a vaccine. Bottom line. But see, those are things that I'm not going to say, okay, well, this political party said this or this. My statement is my platform. Dr. Hall's show and my network, I can make that point. And that's, but I'm not doing it to knock anyone else. I just believe it's an important thing to teach.
I completely agree. Yeah. I mean, kindness begets kindness, hate begets hate, and violence begets more violence. And so I feel the exact same way. You know, I have mixed feelings about masks, but what I feel is that there are a lot of people that are very fearful. And my job as a Christian is to not let something that I do cause another person to stumble. And so if someone's so afraid, then the kind thing to do is put on a mask, and, you know, out of courtesy.
Right, and we still don't know about
regardless
everything.
Of how I feel.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. Like, regardless of whatever the truth is behind coronavirus, let's all just be kind and wear masks out of a courtesy and kindness, you know, and a health thing. But, you know, it's just like me wearing a mask, I don't know. I know exactly what you guys are saying.
All right.
I understand all sides exactly.
All right, Dr. Hall, next question for Jen.
Yeah, no problem. And so this is very, very interesting. And the fact is this, you know, I was put in foster home, Jen, when I was 4 years old in Los Angeles County.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And I was in Los Angeles, and I lived in a number of foster homes, probably three or four. And I was put in boys' home after I had been in a number of juvenile halls there in South Central and Riverside and Orange County.
Yeah.
And ended up in boys' homes. And I lived in boys' homes up until I was 18 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
I had hope because I knew there were people out there like Jen, Lily, who had it in their heart to look out for the orphans that we have out here, for the kids in foster homes. Jen, tell us a little bit about some of the statistics out there that you know about. Where do these orphans and these kids in foster, where do they end up if we don't have people like yourself who intervene?
Well, okay. Don't let me get all focused because I'm going to give you the statistics, but I'm going to first back it up by saying that right now with the pandemic, when we see rise in child abuse numbers, what happens is the number one cause of child abuse is isolation. And the number two cause is stress. So right now with this pandemic, in 2020 in general, what we have is isolation, and we have a stressful situation, an unparalleled stressful situation. And so unfortunately, that means the death toll of children in our country is going to rise. Back in 2011, when I first became a child advocate, 7 children in the United States died every day to child abuse and neglect. And I want to put that really into focus because when a child dies from child abuse or neglect, these are the Gabriel Fernandez cases. These are the cases where the child was not able to be removed. I mean, to die from child abuse or neglect, that child has sustained unimaginable torture for months on end. It takes a long time to kill somebody from child abuse or neglect. So from 2011 until 2019, the work of amazing charities, churches, and heroic individuals and the government, all working together, got that number down to 5 by 2014. So Child Help, which is an amazing charity that I highly support, Child Help has a campaign that's called 5 Too Many, because we would all agree, 5 children dying in the United States every day due to child abuse and neglect. And these are the Gabriel Fernandez cases that don't make the paper because nobody wants to talk about it. That is still 5 too many.
True.
Now, what I'm worried about, and everybody that's worried about this pandemic, any experts from the, like, oh, child abuse numbers, child abuse hotlines, the numbers of, you know, child abuse reports are down. And it's like, yeah, which is terrifying. That's not a good thing. I am horrified to wonder how many children are dying right now due to child abuse and neglect because they're behind closed doors. And the people who make these reports on the child abuse hotline, they're mandated reporters. Mandated reporters means they are mandated by law in order to report that child abuse. So that's why school is a safe place for most children, because teachers and principals, et cetera, they're all mandated reporters, meaning if they see something, they have to say something, or they can lose their job and their license, and furthermore, end up in prison. Doctors, nurses, police officers, fire department, all of these people are mandated reporters. So when the child is in isolation, the reports are dropping because nobody's reporting child abuse. Now, I've been talking to a lot of doctors. I don't know if you've seen this as a doctor. I've been talking to a lot of doctors and nurses, and now their numbers are neck and neck with DD. They've gone, as of 3 weeks ago, I don't know what the current stat is. It's got to be higher. But as of 3 weeks ago, 1,000%, reports were up 1,000%. Now, 1,000%, this is children who are now in ICU. Because if you study the Gabriel Fernandez case, it's a horrific case. I highly recommend people watch the trials of Gabriel Fernandez on Netflix. You know, parents do bring their children into the ICU. They do end up calling 911 when they realize their child is probably dead, because they're like, oh my God, I don't want to go to prison for the rest of my life for murdering my own child. So we have reports now are going up, not on the hotline, but in the hospitals. And so my point is that it's a very relevant time to get involved in foster care. Now, on the foster care statistics, here's what you have under a normal circumstance. Of the children who grow up in foster care, by the way, Los Angeles alone makes up 10% of the kids in foster care reside here in Los Angeles. One city, 10% of the U.S. Kids in foster care and orphans. So this is just, these stats are based on pre-coronavirus stats. So what I'm saying is that these stats, unfortunately, are going to go up. And I'm an optimist, but I'm also a realist. So what I'm saying is, if these statistics rattle you, become a foster parent, become a CASA, which is a court-appointed special advocate, get involved in the fight. Listen to my podcast, Fostering Hope. You know, I have a lot of resources on how you can get involved in the fight. But especially if you're a Christian, you're commanded by the Bible to see our job to care for these children. So you, there's no get off the hook free. You need to help in some way. And here are the statistics pre-coronavirus. If children who grew up in foster care, if they do not land in a loving foster home where they can find rehabilitation, and loving foster parents quit after the first year, there's a 50% burnout on good foster parents. The ones who stay in the game are the ones who are doing it for the money, because there is a way to cheat the system where you can get money, which is horrible. But these are the foster parents where this child, by the way, children who are in foster care, they're not associated with the juvenile delinquent system. That's a huge, huge misconception here in the United States. These are children who have found themselves in an extremely broken system through no fault of their own, but because they've sustained unimaginable abuse and neglect, and they need to be removed. Now, if they don't end up in a loving foster home who really rehabilitates them and is in it for the right reasons, and that's probably only about 30% of foster homes, so I'm trying to recruit better foster parents and keep them in the game, let them not burn out after 50% quit after year one. If they don't land in that, here are the stats. 50% will never graduate high school. That's not because they're dumb children. It's because they get switched from school to school to school to school, and every school is at a different, has a different curriculum. So they may not be learning how to read, because the next school that they've gone to, I've already learned their letters and the phonics that are associated with them, where they've already learned the math, so they cannot catch up, and they don't have the foster parents working with them. You know, the good foster parents are going to rehabilitate that child, mind, soul, and spirit. They're going to get them caught up on their education. But if they don't, 50% don't graduate high school. Wow. Of the homeless population we have in the United States, 50% of our homeless population came from foster care. 70 to 80% of our incarcerated came from foster care, and upwards of 98% of our human trafficking victims, which is sex slavery and labor slavery, came from foster care. So these are harrowing statistics, but here's an encouraging statistic. If one person or one household out of every three Christian churches in the United States became foster parents, there would be no more foster kids waiting in the system, and there would be thousands of homes licensed and willing and ready to help, and those would be the good foster parents who are in it for the children. So one person out of every three churches, think about that. That is incredibly encouraging, because statistics and numbers are mind-numbing. For me, they're not, but you can get lost in the statistic. You can make it us and them. But this is not an us and them. This isn't us. This is an our problem. These are our children in the United States. One person out of every three churches is about one person out of every 750 households. One household out of every 750 becomes a licensed foster parent. We would smash this epidemic and pandemic of its own within 3 months of getting licensed. It would be incredible. You know, we really believe that we can do it, but people have to know what's going on. And then your other question, what happens to these kids if they don't end up in a foster home? They have one of three options. What's currently going on is that these poor social workers, who never get thanked, by the way, if they assess that this child is not in imminent danger and is not going to die, then they have three options. One is to keep them with their abuser. If they don't think they're in imminent danger, they have three options. One, keep them with the abuser. Terrible option. Two, take them to a center that's run by DCFS where these children are literally in holding and they're sleeping under social workers' desks. That's the reality. That's option number two. And three is homelessness. So until there are good foster homes, there is nowhere to put these kids. So I highly encourage that people need to get involved in this fight.
Tell us about the podcast now. About your podcast, Jen.
So I'm doing a podcast.
Yeah.
It's called Fostering Hope. And I created it because I want people who are in the fight to stay in the fight. That includes social workers. There's a 30% turnover in social workers every year because no one is thanking them. So it's a way to encourage people who are in the trenches of foster care to stay in foster care. And it's a way to gently inform people. And I don't necessarily speak as passionately as I did with that last answer, but like I am on fire about this issue. You know, I'm very fired up about this issue.
I think you definitely are. I'll give you that for sure.
Album, 100% of my profit from that is going to benefit, 100% of my profit from my music sales goes to helping children in foster care. And my current program is I am trying to build a neighborhood model, which is very revolutionary. It hasn't really been done to the level that I want to do it, where you have, because what works in the United States, orphanages don't work. You know that. Orphanages don't work. Group homes, they barely work. You know, children need parents. They need the one-on-one attention. And I can't save all the children because that would be the same thing. Yes, I'm a great mom and I love children. That's evident. But what is going to happen if Jen Lilly has 100 kids? Do you think all those kids are going to feel loved and attended to and cared for? No. And it's not because I don't care. It's because you cannot give the child one-on-one attention that they desperately need. So I'm going to build a neighborhood where it's filled with loving foster homes and it's foster parents who are committed to rehabilitating that child, mind, soul, and spirit, who are also willing to come alongside the birth family, because the goal of foster care is to reunify these children with their birth family if and when that's possible. When that is not possible, and that would be not possible because when a child is adopted out of foster care, that means that a judge, a social worker, city council, and a lot of parties have deemed those parents, the birth parents, unfit. And so now these children have been orphaned by the system. So you want the foster parents to be willing to adopt the children in their care when that becomes possible, to keep them stable, to keep them from being passed home to home. So that's what my neighborhood's going to be. You'd have the foster parents would have support on their right, left, behind, and in front of them. We're going to have monthly block parties, you know, barbecues. There'd be a therapy center on grounds. The children don't have to have their walls up when they're playing with other children in the neighborhood. They don't have to explain to their foster children because these children do feel isolated. They do feel judged, you know. And so they don't have to have their walls up around the other neighborhood kids, because it's like, I don't have to explain to you that I'm in foster care, because I know you're in foster care too, so let's just play.
Absolutely. Now, can you tell us specifically any other projects you have going on right now, Jen?
Let's see. So I have my own kids. Caden's adopted. We're in the middle of adoption case for our middle son. And then I am waiting. I've just gotten the project greenlit that I wrote, produced, or am producing and going to act in, called, tentatively called, A Paris Proposal for Hallmark Channel. I'm waiting with Hallmark Channel to figure out when we're going to go back to production. And then I'm also working on federal legislation for foster care. And I'm trying to get a foster care pilot off the ground. And then I don't know what else I do. I run an Airbnb. I do a lot of things. I wear a lot of hats. So, and I've got this music competition going on.
Yes.
I can tell. Called Voices That Give.
Wow.
Yeah, I wear a lot of hats. Yeah.
You wear a ton of hats, and that's good. And I can see that's your spirit, and that's where you go. And you lead by the spirit in so many of your projects. All right, Dr. Hall, summarize Jen.
Well, no problem. And first of all, I say that's why I asked that question. I knew she had the energy and the spirit and what America wanted to hear on that topic. But there you have it. A servant of God, a person who has in her field of acting, okay, has used her heart. To show what we need to do, how we need to follow the Word of God, the Bible, and now in this coronavirus episode or environment, again, she's given us great information of how to live our lives and to be great people and love one another. So thank you very much, Jen, for coming on the show.
Thanks, Jen.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me on. I appreciate it so
appreciate
much.
Appreciate it. All right, take care. On to your next project today. I'm sure you keep going.
People can go to Jen Lilly Music to get involved in my neighborhood.
Awesome. Thanks, Jen.
Awesome.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. That was the Dr. Christopher Hall Show, everyone. Take care.